Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research here at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What do we got on our agenda today?
So we're going to first look at some economic data, touching on labor and employment data, as well as the most recent NFIB survey release. Then we'll speak about markets and the debt and equity market reactions to tariffs and upcoming monetary policy decisions. And then finally, we'll shift into CRE-related topics, including President Trump's address to Congress, as well as a new article that's coming out later today.
All right. Well, how about we jump right in? You want to tell us about NFIB?
Sure. So the National Federation of Independent Businesses, or NFIB, their Small Business Optimism Index came out today, which is Tuesday the 11th, and it showed that the optimism index fell by 2.1 points in February to 100.7. This is the fourth consecutive month above the 51-year average of 98. And 4.4 points below its most recent peak of 105.1, which was set in December of 24. So while the optimism index moderated a bit in February, coming down only 2 points, the uncertainty index was up 4 points to 104. The uncertainty amongst small business owners has really whipsawed over the last 4 months. It recently peaked in October of 24 at 110. Before falling to 86 in December, and now it's right back up to 104 in February. This uncertainty has really swung expectations for economic improvement amongst the participants in the NFIB survey. The net percent of owners who are expecting the economy to improve fell 10 percentage points from last month to a net 37%. In the most recent report, a new question was added to the survey, really to assess and better understand how small business owners evaluate the overall health of their business. 11% of owners reported that the health of their business was excellent. 55% reported it as good. 27% reported it as okay. And 6% reported the state of their business is bad. I think that this is an interesting metric to include and an additional question. And while this is the first inclusion of this question, I'm quite interested to see how this evolves in the future releases. If the outlook is and optimism is moderating, uncertainty is up, diving in a bit deeper to more of the survey results, and focusing on expansion plans of small business owners, we saw that 12% of owners reported that it is a good time to expand their business. This is down 5 percentage points from January, and this is the largest monthly decrease since April of 2020. In terms of sales and pricing, with inflation and high labor costs and price pressures really across and throughout the supply chain, a net 32% of owners said that they're raising average selling prices. This is up 10 percentage points from January and the largest monthly increase since April of 2021, and the third highest in the survey's history, which dates back to the late 80s. A net 29% of business owners plan to hike prices in the next 3 months. This is up 3 percentage points from January and the highest reading in 11 months. But all of this, coming out of this survey, it wasn't all negative. There were a few silver linings. First, in terms of credit and financing conditions, the financing environment for small businesses appears to be improving at least month on month, as a net 2% of owners reported that their last loan was harder to get than in previous attempts. This is down one percentage point from January. So a very small month-on-month movement, but is the lowest level reporting since February of 2022, which if you think back, that's right as rates were about to start hiking. This is overall a positive sign that lenders are increasingly willing to lend to small business owners. Additionally, encouraging in the financing and credit space, the percentage of owners reporting borrowing on a regular basis fell three percentage points from January to 24%. This is the lowest since May of 2022. So if you put that together, availability of credit is improving and fewer, even if only incrementally fewer, small business owners are regularly relying on credit to grow their business. Shifting from financing to profits, small business earnings showed some signs of improvement. Net negative 24% reported positive earnings trends. This is up one percentage point from January. So how to interpret this is it's a net percentage number. And while it is negative, it was slightly less negative than in January. So overall, an improvement. But the report also called out a number of challenges. So we've already touched on uncertainty, but another big challenge is really on the labor and employment side. So labor costs remain the single most important problem for big business owners and rose 3 percentage points to 12% in the February report. This is right at the same level as in February of 2023, and only 1 percentage point below the survey's highest reading of 13%, which was reached in December of 2021. So 38% of all small business owners reported job openings they could not fill in February. This is up 3 percentage points from January and the highest reading since August of 24. Of the 53% of owners hiring or trying to hire in January, a whopping 89% reported few or no qualified applicants for the positions they were trying to fill. And looking forward, a seasonally adjusted net 15% of owners plan to create new jobs in the next 3 months from February. This is down 3 percentage points from January. So I still look at you can still see that many of these small businesses are really struggling to fill the positions that they have open with qualified applicants. But then also, I think you're starting to see some of the hiring exhaustion really set in as fewer are planning to open new positions. But this survey really focuses on small businesses. And I know we had a bunch of labor data come out looking at all businesses and across the economy. What did you see there, Cole?
Yeah, so I mean, not only does it cover small business, but it's also got a lot of soft measure type questions that are supplementary to some of the data that we get from some of these government and other private data releases. But there were actually four big ones that we got in the last week that I hope are going to shed some light on the kind of labor situation. And so I'll do my best to summarize those, but those four were the ADP employment survey, the Challenger report from Challenger Gray and Christmas, the employment situation, which is from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and the JOLTS survey, a job openings and labor turnover survey, which is also from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, though that covers the month of January. Those other three are for February. So to summarize what some of the stuff I was looking at here, that ADP employment figure showed that precedes the employment situation from the BLS. And it showed that private employers added 77,000 jobs in February. That was the smallest since July of 24. They actually saw notable losses in trade, transportation, education, and health. And to relate this back to what you were talking about, small businesses actually lost 12,000 jobs. And the Western region lost 27,000 jobs, while the Northeast gained 55,000. They said annual pay grew 4.7%. Job changers saw 6.7% gains in pay. But this is a pretty low number. That 77,000, I think, shocked a lot of folks who pay attention to this ADP figure. Their chief economist came out and said that this kind of lower than expected figure was due to policy uncertainty, fear of slowdowns in consumer spending. So this is just speaking to broad caution in the labor market. But there was another piece of data that came out on March 5th. This is the Challenger report from Challenger Gray and Christmas. They're a large kind of global outplacement and executive coaching firm, and they also track workforce trends. And they showed in that report that U.S. employers actually cut 172,000 jobs in February. That was the highest since 2009. It was a 245% month-over-month increase and a 103% year-over-year increase in layoffs. Now, this is really just showing the impact of DOGE. The government sector actually led job cuts with over 62,000 cuts, but there were some in retail and technology, around 39,000 and 14,000 respectively, but still kind of a shocking number to be compared to raw cuts at 2009 levels. But when we look at the employment situation, that a lot of that doesn't seem to have flown through. The economy added 151,000 jobs in February, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And the unemployment rate was actually unchanged at 4.1%. So the number of part-time workers seeking full-time employment did rise significantly. And we actually saw that hourly wage earnings grew 4% year on year. So to tie all this together a little bit, job growth actually fell short of expectations, despite being much higher than that ADP figure. There were some gains in healthcare and financial activities, so presumably positive signs for traditional medical office demand. There was actually strength in transportation and warehousing, and those gains, though, were offset a bit by the decline in federal government employment. So some interesting stuff there. And we just got this today. We're recording on March 11th. The January 2025 JOLTS report was revealing as well. So there was modest improvement in the number of openings to 7.7 million. Hires rates were steady. So the labor market appears to be fairly steady, but it's a little outdated. It's failing to account for some of the latest kind of economic volatility. There's a lot of policy uncertainty that's been introduced in the last couple of months, in 6 to 8 weeks or so, that's not going to be covered in this survey. It's worth taking a look at all of this together. One of the indexes we don't cover very often on a podcast is the Indeed Job Postings Index, which they started posting during the pandemic. And it's really showing declining demand for workers. It's sitting at around 110 or a level of 110 if you peg 100 to February of 2020. So just a bit over the number of postings that we were seeing before the pandemic. But these are still declining at a fairly significant rate year on year. There are about 10% fewer jobs posted on Indeed than there were a year ago. And while that rate appears to be approaching zero, that would be, you know, a flat number of postings relative to a year ago. So I think there's a lot to consider here. The labor market is still fairly strong. Unemployment is not really rising, but you're seeing some cracks. So I think it's worth taking that into account when you consider what's going on in the rest of the economy. So Omar, I'm going to turn it back to you because I know there has been a lot of market movements lately. Do you want to walk us through what's been going on?
Yeah. So a lot's been moving the markets. What has been really front and center has been tariff talks, with more on again, off again than the middle school dating scene, and no less drama. The U.S. tariff policy has really whipsawed markets over the last week as President Trump implemented, then modified, and then announced elements and new levies with some of our largest trading partners. So starting in North America with the 25% duties levied on imports from Canada and Mexico, if you just look at the timeline, President Trump put the tariffs on Canada and Mexico in place last Tuesday. Then on Wednesday, he announced a one-month exemption for automobiles. This is one of the industries that's hardest hit by these tariffs. Then on Thursday, he extended the same exemption to all imports from Canada and Mexico that comply with the USMCA agreement. Looking outside of North America, tariffs on goods imported from China were increased by 10% on Tuesday last week, bringing the total to almost 30%. And on Friday of last week, President Trump said he's considering large-scale sanctions and tariffs on Russia in an effort really to bring them to the negotiating table to end the war in Ukraine. So just a lot of tariffs and tariff talks. But what does this all mean for the economy, monetary policy, capital markets? Well, nobody really knows for certain. And that's probably one of the reasons why the NFIB Uncertainty Index really shot up. But it has caused a risk-off move across capital markets and called into question some of the outlooks for growth and inflation ahead, and really has introduced some new clouds for CRE as well. And one of the things that I think has been interesting has been listening to the exec commentary or reading through the transcripts of real estate and REIT executives as they give company presentations over the last week. So coming out of the Raymond James conference that happened on the 4th and 5th of March, Sumit Roy, who's the president and CEO of Realty Income Corporation, he noted that the impact of tariffs felt by consumers really comes down to how much of the tariffs are passed on by retailers to the consumers, and that when retailers do pass on the costs to consumers, it does take a toll on the consumers and really does change up the consumer base. Mr. Roy noted that while many retailers are affected, not all are affected the same. So if you think about non-discretionary retailers like grocery or convenience stores or quick serve restaurants, they might not see as much of a shift in their consumer base as much as discretionary retailers, because the consumer behavior would likely change quicker for the discretionary retailers than the demand would change for the non-discretionary retailers. So I think that's one kind of concept to keep in mind. But also at that same Raymond James conference, Timothy Arndt, who's the CFO of Prologis, noted that tariffs are something that Prologis, which is the largest industrial REIT, has contemplated for quite a while now. He mentioned that the U.S. have been in this higher tariff environment since the first Trump administration and through the Biden administration, which didn't really meaningfully remove any of the tariffs that the first Trump administration had put on, specifically targeting China. And so Mr. Arndt, using this kind of like lesson from the past years, noted that while we have seen some supply chain shifts and some onshoring, it hasn't been a complete or rapid overhaul. He noted that they saw U.S. manufacturing increase by about 2% from the first Trump administration through the Biden administration, which really, if you think about it, is not a major wave of reshoring or really an entire reconfiguration of supply chains. The main reason that there was a muted impact was really the labor arbitrage or the significantly cheaper labor costs that can still be found outside of the U.S. And this labor arbitrage really still outweighed the cost of the added tariffs, which if you think about the tariffs, they're really a cost that goes into the goods and is not necessarily the sticker price of the retail goods when they're being sold to the consumer. However, Mr. Arndt did note that during the period since the first Trump administration, when the tariffs on China were first put in place, there was a major reconfiguration of where manufacturing was getting done. So even though it didn't necessarily bring everything back onshore to the U.S., you still saw kind of muted growth in China, but you saw rapid manufacturing growth in Southeast Asia, in Mexico, and also in Europe. Now, if you boil this down, what does it mean for U.S. industrial property owners? Mr. Arndt shed some light on that and noted that the uncertainty arising from tariffs really does weigh heavily on and delay decision-making by industrial space occupiers and tenants. And that's something that he noted they were currently seeing with these current tariffs. So whether that is taking a 5-year versus a 10-year lease or whether that means taking new space, those decisions seem to be delayed, or we're starting to see the early signs of delay with the current tariff talks. And then at a separate conference, at a Citi Global Property CEO conference, which also happened last week, CEO of Weyerhaeuser, which is the largest timber REIT, spoke to investors and analysts and described the potential impact for timber and lumber markets. The first thing that Mr. Stockfish noted was he differentiated between tariffs and lumber duties. So tariffs are the 25% levy that the president announced last week were coming into effect. And those really impact all wood products coming into the United States. And considering that about 25% of U.S. lumber comes from Canada and about 30% of oriented strand board or OSB used in the U.S. comes from Canada, these tariffs affect quite a significant flow of wood products, ultimately construction materials. Duties, on the other hand, so separate from tariffs, are a separate component and are really only specific to lumber. They're in place because there's been kind of a long-standing dispute between the United States and Canada over how logs are priced in Canada. So currently, duties apply to lumber coming into the U.S. from Canada, and that duty is set to rise later this year in the summer, in August, and that should go up to 25 to 30% from its current level of 14.5%. If you take this all together, because the duties are on top of the tariffs, it puts the lumber and wood supply markets or wood product markets in a rather precarious spot, because not only do you have the seasonal components, which with warmer weather, that tends to drive more building activity, which then that drives price increases for wood products. And on top of that, you have the existing duties, which are set to rise in August, and the tariffs that are currently being discussed. All of that makes it a rather dynamic market. And to bring this back and really focus it on CRE, I think that this is something that may challenge development activity in the U.S. if lumber and wood product prices are set to increase. But it could also spur a bit more, I would say, investment in the U.S. wood supply capacity, whether that means bringing more sawmills online or if it means driving higher value for timber and wood products. This is something that if the tariffs and duties are to remain in place and we're ultimately looking to see more development activity, whether that's a multifamily or even really any other sectors, but particularly multifamily and housing, we're likely going to need greater wood capacity, production capacity in the U.S. And so this is something that I think is worth watching because it ultimately will factor into the overall development costs. So we just talked a lot about tariffs, and tariffs popped up again last week in the Fed's Beige Book, which showed that contacts are really more concerned about tariffs, tougher immigration policy, and supply shocks than about interest rates. But that being said, interest rates will likely come back into focus over the next week, given that we're approaching the Fed's next rate decision. And while the outcome of that rate decision is really not expected to be that there will be no cut, the futures markets are pricing in near certainty that there won't be a cut announced. I think that the Fed's next meeting is really going to be exciting for two main reasons. One is because they will be releasing the first of four summary economic projections, or the SEP, to see how the FOMC members have really changed their outlooks for the years ahead in terms of growth, as well as where the policy rate should be. Given all that's happening and coming from Washington and changing up the global economy here. But then second, I think the focus of the next Fed meeting is really going to be on the press conference to see how Fed Chair Powell responds to the questions surrounding White House policy implications and how these policies are being incorporated into monetary policy decisions. And while I suspect the Fed's independence will be reiterated multiple times during the press conference, I'm eager to hear how the FOMC members are really incorporating potential price pressure impacts from trade and immigration policies into their projections going forward and monetary policy decisions for the year ahead. I think that this will be in focus because one of the FOMC members and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York's president, John Williams, said last week that the Fed is beginning to factor tariffs into its price forecasts and that he has somewhat higher prices in his outlook going forward, though he still expects the long-term inflation to be around 2%, which is not really a change from prior. But I'm curious to see how Fed Chair Powell's comments address this point in particular in the upcoming press conference. So if tariffs are feeding inflation and raising growth concerns, that brings stagflation back into the ongoing discussion and markets focus. The Atlanta Fed's GDP Now model is showing a real GDP growth estimate for the first quarter to be a negative 2.4%. While this reading was updated on March 6th and was an improvement from the prior minus 2.8% read, this was really driven by higher contributions from consumption and investment. But the overall expected drag on growth coming from net exports or trade is a minus 3.8%, which really has continued to pull the overall real growth forecast into negative territory and is quite concerning. And that concern playing out in markets, which have been trying to digest all of the news and understand the potential implications for economic and earnings growth going forward. So through the last week and continuing on, at least while we're recording this, U.S. capital market activity is really in kind of risk-off mode. Equity indices are in the red. The VIX index has been on the rise and is at a level nearing 30, which is up about 15% from the last week and has already passed the mid-December high of 27. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury security has fallen. It's coming off of its bottom from last week, but is still trending down as the as many investors are moving into kind of a more safe haven assets. And the yield on the 10-year is right around 4.2. This is down 60 basis points from mid-January. And the falling yield on the 10-year, coupled with still high short-term note yields, it has re-inverted the yield curve when you're looking at the 10-year and Fed funds or the 10-year and three-month pairs. This inversion of the yield curve is usually a signal of lowering or slowing growth to come, as well as a shift to risk-off investor appetite. Also confirming some of that concern, credit spreads continue to widen, particularly for lower quality credit. So the spread between high yield and single B bonds is around 490 basis points. This is widened by about 60 basis points over the last month. And then finally, the rate on the 30-year fixed rate mortgage is around 6.63% at the end of February. This is down 40 basis points from mid-January high. The 30-year fixed tends to follow Treasury movements. As the yield on the 10-year comes down, perhaps there'll be a little bit more cheaper financing available for home buying. And then looking at the real estate space in the markets, I would say that overall real estate, whether it's REITs or real estate services, generally real estate has outperformed the broader market indices, but remain in the red. I think one way of interpreting this is that many of the fundamentals for the real estate space remain intact and that the valuation adjustments for real estate have largely been priced in. And so you do see the REITs and listed real estate really moving on expectations around what's happening to Fed funds and the 10-year. However, as there's little expectation for any sort of near-term interest rate cuts, you've seen these movements in these share prices really be quite muted. But just discussed a lot there and a lot of markets reacting to rapidly changing situations. A lot of this is coming out from Washington, and I like to think of it as Washington announcements are rocking Wall Street. But Cole, I know you've been focused on and paying attention to really a lot of the announcements coming out of DC. Are there any CRE related announcements that caught your attention over the last week?
Well, I think there's a couple things worth mentioning. President Trump had his first address of his second term to Congress on March 4th. And so I think that there were a couple things, at least for CRE stakeholders, to be mindful of, whether they're directly related to CRE or indirectly related to CRE, or they'll have general implications for the economy. So I've got a handful of bullet points. It was quite a long address, but he did flesh out a couple of things that we'd been hearing along the campaign trail prior to January of this year. And so a couple of things I wanted to call out. One is that he did signal a return to office mandate for federal workers, which I think will be beneficial to some office markets, such as the DC office market. However, that's coupled with a huge reduction in the federal workforce. So these are two kind of counteracting forces that might ultimately render them moot. A couple other indirect implications for CRE here. He did state that he wants to roll back 10 regulations for every one that is added, probably speed up various corporate decision-making. It's probably being slowed down by other policies being levied now. He proposed tax cuts, including no tax on tips, overtime, or Social Security. And so I think that probably has some trickle-down kind of consumer spending implications, potentially good for the retail and hospitality sectors. Some other indirect impacts to CRE. He did state that there would be some major investments in energy and shipbuilding. So probably some implications for industrial CRE and key coastal or energy heavy markets. And of course, a lot of the big topics that you just went through and that we've gone through on previous episodes, tariffs and the ensuing trade wars, I absolutely agree with you. Kind of drive up construction costs or construction input costs. They're going to cause shifts in global trade policy that's going to complicate supply chains. And so I think all the implications that you've already discussed are things that were mentioned there too. And of course, one that we talked about last week, he reiterated his support for the gold card. So that's for those who want to hear our deep dive on that, I recommend going to last week's episode. And just to reiterate, were this to go through or be a revised version of the EB-5 program, could really spur some investment and demand for high-end residential and commercial real estate here in the coming years. But just to put a cap on this, Congress is entering budget discussions and negotiations now. And so I think a lot more of these topics are slated to come up. And so I think we're going to keep talking about this topic. We're barely to day 50 of the new administration. And so I think a lot of these kind of direct and indirect impacts to the economy and therefore CRE are going to be something that we focus on the podcast. But thought, since we had an opportunity to hear all the president's comments in kind of one sitting, that it was worth calling those out. But I'm sure there'll be more things that pop up in the next few weeks here. But I think that's all we had for some kind of other CRE topics. I wanted to go ahead and jump into some brief announcements. One is that by the time this episode launches, there's going to be a new article live on the Altus website, a bit of an evergreen piece on impact investing in commercial real estate. So this is a piece based on a conversation I had with some industry experts on a panel at our Altus Connect conference back in September. In it, we summarize some of the comments from the panel. We discuss, among other things, the difference between impact investing and ESG, the relative attractiveness of investing in affordable housing, the emerging need for better data and sustainability benchmarks, and everything from U.S. housing finance to climate resiliency, and ultimately how to make impact investments in a higher interest rate environment. So if that's a topic that interests you, I'd encourage folks to check out that article. I'm sure we can place a link in the show notes. It should be up by the time the article goes live. Omar, do we have any other data releases we want to pay attention to this week?
Yep, a lot of data releases. Starting off on the 17th, we get some retail and business inventories data. Then on Tuesday, we get building permits and housing starts. Wednesday is the FOMC rate decision. And on Thursday, we get existing home sales data.
Excellent. We'll be paying attention to those. That is all the time we have today. Before I sign off, I want to encourage listeners that if you like the show, we would love it if you could rate it. Give us 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. Leave us comments there as well. We'd be happy to read them. Or feel free to just send us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd love to know what topics you'd like covered on the program. In the meantime, Omar, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.